You're listening
to Welcome to Comics, episode number 287. This week, we talk about Monstrous. Visit welcometocomics.com, hear past episodes, see what we're reading next, or send us feedback. This show is supported by listeners like you. Access bonus episodes by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/welcometocomics. And now, the cast begins.
I am so excited for Valerian. The second trailer is out, and it still looks so good. It just, like, I don't know what the plot is. I almost don't even care what the plot is, because it's so, like, I can tell just from the trailer that it's going to be so visually insane. Like, the same way that no matter what you think of the movie, like, it's impossible to watch Fifth Element and not, like, have your eyes pop out of your head the first time you see it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just the bright colors, the incredible visuals of Fifth Element. And this feels like that even on steroids. Like, Luc Besson is just like, I did that, and now I'm going to do it harder. Because I know I can.
I'm excited.
I'm super pumped for that movie, and I want to read the comic so bad, the comic source.
Oh, there's a comic source?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's going to be our episode 298.
Oh, there we go.
3 months away.
It's a French graphic novel.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
I watched Power Rangers.
Oh, yeah. How was that? I heard that was really good.
Do tell.
It was actually a pretty decent movie. Like, really? It's not a good movie, but it's put together well.
Huh.
Like, it's paced pretty well, and, like, the visuals are okay, and I don't know. I after I watched it, I was satisfied. I don't know how a better way to say that. Like, well, so, for example, so, you know, I was probably, like, 10 or 11 or so when Power Rangers first came out in the U.S., so I only really watched like the first couple seasons with like the original Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. And then I kind of just grew out of it. So I kind of had a bit of a nostalgia thing going on when I watched the movie. But Lucia, my wife, who didn't watch Power Rangers as a kid, actually really enjoyed the movie. It's a pretty good, it's just a good action flick.
That was going to be my question, because I never got into Power Rangers at all as a kid. I was too nerdy for it. So I was wondering how it would be to watch it, like, not having seen that. So it's cool.
Oh, there's no, you don't have to have watched any Power Rangers before to watch this movie.
Woo! Then I will be watching that shit on Netflix.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, I came out of the movie satisfied with what I had watched.
Nice. I will check that out. It sounds like the kind of thing that I want to, like, sit down with a bottle of whiskey and watch.
Yeah. I mean, like, the special effects are pretty cool. The teenagers are teenagers, but they're not really, like, I don't know, they're not, like, hyperbolic representations of kids these days.
Okay. So not Riverdale.
Oh, right. Wait. I just want to point out, Riverdale characters are actually, like, aside from a couple mustache twirly people, not teenage tropes. Huh. In a good way. Except Jughead, who's super emo.
God, it's so disappointing, because Jughead could be so good. Sorry.
Like Power Rangers, like, the leader of the team is, like, he's a sports, like, he's a jock, basically, but he's kind of, like, fallen. All the kids are, like, all the kids who become Power Rangers are kind of, like, damaged kids.
Oh.
Like, yeah, I heard one of them is supposed to be. I heard one of them is supposed to be a good autistic portrayal.
Oh yeah, he really is
a good portrayal of an autistic kid. That's awesome.
That's cool.
And like he says it, but he doesn't. I think they did a good. I mean, I don't know that many autistic children or people, but I don't know. From what I understand, like you said, it was a positive portrayal. Yeah, it was just cool, and like I thought the suits looked a little goofy, but like the giant robots fighting at the end was cool, and the villain was pretty mustache twirly, but she's supposed to be like a crazy evil space witch. I don't know what she was.
Mother Talzin, right?
She was way crazier than Mother Talzin.
Okay.
Mother Talzin. But seriously, it was a. It was a. I thought it was pretty good.
All right. Do you guys want to talk about this week's comic?
Sure.
Nah.
This week's comic.
This week, we read Monstrous Awakening. This is written by Marjorie Liu with art by Sana Takeda. This collects the first six issues of the run. And this thing, I'm going to, like, this genre is not my cup of tea.
What is this genre?
I don't know. The, like, horror fantasy, I want to say.
I don't see it as horror. It is fantasy.
Because, this feels like an intersection of fantasy and, I mean, obviously Lovecraft because of the whole old dead gods kind of a thing, but, like, there's that Lovecraftian kind of supernaturalness that's an embedded part of this fantasy world, and that kind of intersection, I don't know, that kind of Lovecraftian stuff doesn't, I don't know.
Well, I'm
not into tentacles.
The thing that I can see I can understand the visual cues that, you know, harken to the people, like characters like Cthulhu and stuff. But I think the horror of Lovecraft's work comes from the feeling of like existential dread.
Yeah.
Like the universe is so big that it's beyond human comprehension. And like, you know, when characters are awakened to that fact in Lovecraft, they go crazy because they know that humanity is nothing compared to what the universe is really about. And I didn't get that here. This was more of a like supernatural crusade type story. You know, she, like the Kumeya, who are like a religious sect, and are trying to commit genocide against the Arcanix. And then you have this girl, Micah, who is kind of caught up in the middle because she's trying to figure out her past, but in doing so, like searching for her answers, she ends up becoming, you know, fighting for Arcanix. Like she saves the people in the jail in the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. She frees the other prisoners, but I don't think her reasoning was, her goal was not to free the other prisoners. She wanted to get close to Yvette to find answers out.
Mm-hmm. Freeing the prisoners was a distraction.
Exactly. So she's not really a hero. She's certainly the protagonist, but she's not a hero. And so I don't know. When I think of horror, like, having monsters doesn't automatically make something horror. I think it's, I agree with the supernatural part, but I don't think the intention of these creatures are to be scary or to terrify, at least terrify the readers.
Yeah. And I would say, like, if anything, this reminds me more of, like, the mythos in Neil Gaiman's Sandman. I think David's completely right in that, like, there's nothing horrendous here. It's like all the human acts are bad, right? Mm-hmm. Like the people do the terrible things, and these gods are just kind of these monoliths that stand there and do nothing. Like, I think at one point, the little fox girl is like, can they see us? And Micah says, the dead don't see. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're not super effectual in the world. They're just, I guess, like a reminder of, I don't know, things that used to be. But, yeah, I actually really liked this comic. This is my genre. And by that, I mean, like, I love the whole fantasy thing, the giants, you know, spread mythology of it, like, where there's an established thing of, like, here's the gods and they're dead. And, you know, then there were these demigods and people can use magic and there's this war and people are, like, you know, really, easy to set off on various, like, points of contention about each other. And I really like that kind of setting. The one thing that I read about this and did not see for myself, and this is probably my own lack of understanding of history, is this is supposed to be like an alternate early 1900s Asia.
Yeah, I didn't get that from reading it, but that's how the... if you read the blurb about it on Comixology, that's how it's described.
Huh. Yeah, I also I don't know nearly enough to identify that.
But, I mean, that's probably just me.
Like, you know what this reminds me of?
I mean, there is a big wall.
Mm. It reminds me of Princess Mononoke.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
I can see that.
You know, there's these spirits in the world that are kind of fading in the face of human development, and you have these characters who are kind of trying to hold on to that natural harmony with nature, and this other force that's trying to bend nature to its will. So I can kind of see some... It reminds me a lot of, like I said, Princess Mononoke, and part of that is the interaction between... the main characters of this comic and these spirits or nature gods or whatever you want to call them. Like in Princess Mononoke, the characters see a lot of these spirits, but they're so they're too big for them to really interact with. And that's the case here too. But there are these demigods that interact with the humans. Just like in this comic, so.
Yeah, the ancients here. So, David, did you like this one?
Yeah, I did enjoy this comic. It was really interesting. I haven't read anything like this before. It was, you know, the story was interesting, and the art was... It was visually appealing to me. I can say definitively that I enjoyed the story. However, I'm not like, I find the characters really interesting because like I have mixed feelings about them. Like Micah Half-Wolf, I don't know if I like her as a person. I think as a character, she's very interesting, but I don't know if I'm a big fan of her. She's so focused on her goal that there's these people who are trying to befriend her and help her, and she dismisses them because they can't like keep up with her on her mission. And so I don't know that I really like her as a person. And to me, you know, I think that makes for, makes it interesting to me.
All right.
I think she's actually kind of fascinating because she's clearly the protagonist and she's not a hero, but she's not an anti-hero, right? Because mm-hmm. she's not like, she just is in it for her and she incidentally does good things for other people, like freeing all the prisoners. And it gives you this sense of her, like, she's not like a protagonist you'd want to look up to or someone that you would hold as like any kind of standard, but she seems very much like a person, right? Like an actual person, given her situation and abilities, might go in and kind of disregard everyone else, but then like still help them because she's not evil. And it's actually kind of interesting because the only thing that she starts forging a real relationship with is the big scary Cthulhu god that's sleeping inside of her.
Yeah.
Like, I think out of everyone in the comic in this first volume, that thing is the only thing with which she has a real dialogue where she's more open and not like just trying to keep all her secrets. By the same turn, I kind of understand why she's so distant given her past. She's not been in situations that would, you know, cause her to trust others.
And now she's in a position where she can't even trust herself. She killed that little dead angel kid.
Yeah.
And had no clue she did it. Yeah, I was like, I was on a little roller coaster on whether or not I like this comic, and then I decided, yeah, I think I kind of like it. When we got to the point where the god inside of her goes, wait, what, you can hear me? These people can hear me? Oh, shit. I thought I was talking to myself this whole time.
So Andy, what did you not like about this comic?
I was really, at the beginning, the story really off-put me. Like, the whole slave thing, and there's stuff in the beginning that made me feel like there was extra, not brutality, but extra hardcoreness that wasn't necessarily there for a purpose. Like when the human looking Arcanic in the prison, like bangs his head in repeatedly until he kills himself on the bars, telling everybody they should, like that. Like I understand fundamentally, like, okay, you're showing it this to drive home the point that this is how bad these people are. And you want to drive home that point early. But I like, that's not a way to do it that I like to read. And I think it's too early for me, like, at that point, I haven't bought into the story, and that amount of gore puts me off. Like, if you show me that in issue 2, and I'm invested in the story a bit more, I can see I have more context for this world and how severe that is. But for me to get that first off, I'm like, okay, I don't know if I like a world that starts off this severe. And then you find out later on, like, actually, the Arcanic realms are kind of nice, generally. It's beautiful over there. And, like, you learn stuff. So I was immediately off-put, and then I'm kind of like, okay, but the art's really, really good. I really like the detail and so much of, like, the clothing pieces and the set pieces. Like, it's insane. The woman who got resurrected in her, like, peacock robe, that thing is fucking sick. Yeah, Yvette's peacock robe is cool. plus there's great cleavage everywhere, so that helps. No, okay, but there are boobs everywhere in this.
That well, is true.
It's clearly a matriarchal society, and, you know, there's very few male characters in this comic.
Yes.
Which I didn't realize until I had finished. Like, it didn't occur to me that there were, like, not that many male characters. Mm-hmm. Which I thought was interesting, and I'm glad it wasn't something that they, like, tried to drive home. Like, look at this, there's no men. Because there are. Some of them are background characters, and you know, there's some characters we see, like the Corvin from the Dusk Council, you know, the angel guy. You know, he's a male, obviously. But, what am I trying to say? Yeah. So I thought that was pretty interesting that there were very few male characters, and well, that's why there's so many boobs, Andy.
Is the point. Well, not just that there are female characters with boobs, but like the outfits are all very cleavagey. But I really did buy into this when the god inside of Micah turned out to have a personality and a backstory and something interesting. And I'm interested on the back and forth between them. Like, when the god was like, just give me control for a couple minutes and I can get us out of this, no problem. And then she's like, fuck you, give me control. Give me your power, asshole. And he's like, whoa, hold on, I'm the one making the deals. And she's like, fuck you, it's my body, I'm the one making the deals. Like, I like that back and forth because that's the kind of thing that I feel like in this setup where you have the god inside of a person, like, the trope is always, oh, I can't control the beast inside me. And I thought for sure that's the way it was going. When she wakes up the next day and the angel kid is dead, sucked dry by the god inside of her. Like, oh, okay, we're going to go down the trope of she blacks out and the god inside her, she can't control it. And there's a little bit of that in here, but I think at the end of the day, what I appreciate about it the most is that it goes past that barrier to where they actually talk to each other. And, like, he's exploring her memories, and she's there, too. And he's like, wait, you're not supposed to be here. Like, she's constantly surprising an old god, which is something I imagine isn't supposed to happen. And then I am totally, totally sold on the last page when the fucking Baroness is goddamn do ya. And I'm like, okay, that's awesome. That I like.
Yeah, I mean, I think the old god is going to be one of my favorite aspects of this, because I actually do intend to keep reading. And it's like you said, I mean, so many times it is about, like, oh, controlling it. And I kind of think that will happen in the future, especially because right now this old god is, like, really sleepy. And I feel like you get the sense from him that he would put up a fight, but he just does not want to deal with this shit right now. And yeah. I think it will be interesting, but it's also good that they're going to develop the relationship first and then put in the conflict. Mm-hmm. Because I think so often, especially when a character has, like, this awesome power inside them, we see them where they are already fully developed, they have the power, we see them do something super cool with it, and then, you know, they fight with it. And we don't see the relationship actually develop, but I think it's just really neat to be able to see them from equal positions first, because it reveals kind of who they are. And we also do get the sense that he was released and did something terrible, because that one battle that everyone talks about, like, where they're, you know, people just died for hundreds and hundreds of miles, and it seems like anyone who came out alive turned into, like, a half-monster thing. Like, Yvette, I think, was there, and it's implied she's not quite human anymore.
The Mother Superior, also.
Yeah, the Mother Superior, and I think also the daughter who got burned.
Sophia.
Sophia, oh, yeah. Yes, thank you. So, I'm wondering, did you get the sense that it was, like, the old god coming out of Micah and doing that?
I don't know. That's one of the things that did get me with this comic, is there's a lot of stuff that is on a too slow of a drip feed for me to enjoy. Like, I know that I can't be told everything up front, and because then there's no reason to keep reading. But that's one of those things I was like, this is really vague, and I can throw out guesses, speculate, but there'd be too many things in this that I'm guessing on and speculating. Like, the mask, I think, has something to do with all this, too. The people in the picture that we don't recognize have something, like, this is all connected somehow, and I feel like Micah isn't smart enough to put it together, and since we're following Micah, we don't get enough pieces to put it together in any kind of reasonable way. So, I mean, it could be. That could be where he's from. I don't know. Like, that's one of the things that did continually frustrate me about this comic. I was like, come on. And then we get full pages in the end of some of these that are good with exposition from the retired cat of the research whatever.
I liked those.
Yeah, those were nice. Except all they did, they gave me more context on the things that I could already piece together. So, like, half of the page was recap and half was just more context, but none of them got me any closer to understanding what I actually wanted to know. It's like when you read Attack on Titan and they talk about the structure of the city and the walls. Oh, yeah. I'm like, that's great, but what the fuck are the Titans? You know, like, all this information is great, but what the fuck is this mask?
Whatever it is no good.
Yeah. Even the god doesn't want it.
Yeah, that's a bad sign.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, though, like, some of the stuff really intrigued me, and I liked not knowing. For instance, So we're given certain pieces of information, like the most powerful Arcanic ever was the Shaman Empress. And then you get the sense that, like, maybe she's coming back. And then you see, like, the stuff with the cats talking about who she was a little bit. And it seems like the mask might have been hers.
Hmm.
And it's not important to know who she was or what she did, but just having it there in the background, I think, adds a good flavor, at least for me. So I appreciate that level of, like, you don't know, but here it is.
Yeah. And I think Micah being Micah Half-Wolf and the way they describe the wolves beating out the bears, and that brought some of the semblance of peace. I think it was the wolves that beat the bear. The wolf agent, and she's half wolf, and talking about, like, the first Arcanic was a complete surprise, and they don't say who the first Arcanic was a half of, like, half human, half witch ancient. So, like, there's a bunch of this context that's been, we're being told over and over is important, and then Micah's name is straight up half wolf. So,
yeah.
I'm kind of thinking, like, you're being subtle, but with a really big stick. Like, I am 85% sure that I can figure out who Micah's, what, because her bloodline is super important, apparently, to the old god inside her and the mask. Like, I'm like 85% sure that I can figure out what Micah's heritage is. Of course, there's always a chance it can throw you for a loop, and I appreciate that, and I think this comic has the capacity to throw me completely for a loop, too. But all that stuff seems really like, here's all this context we're just going to mention, you know, in case. Okay. Sure.
Yeah, and I think it's likely that we're going to find out that she's like some crazy reincarnation of the Shaman Empress and, you know, the chosen one, that level of thing. But she doesn't act very chosen, so I think it'll be amusing if she is.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it doesn't act very chosen. She's a little Anakin. What did you guys think of Master Ren? The poets say.
Oh, I love that cat. I think he's actually one of the more interesting characters because he's helping her, but it's really unclear what his motives are. Mm-hmm. Because I think they said the cats tend to be spies and they have their own empire too or something. Like, it wasn't clear to me whether they were part of the Dusk Court or, like, the Sun Court, or if they just were kind of this tertiary thing that did contracts with both, and that's what it seemed like. So, I also don't know... Wait, he was the one who sold them to the Dusk Court, right?
Yes.
But then Tuya was there.
Yes.
And he was supposed to have been working for Tuya the whole time, so I guess he's still working for her.
Yeah. But was probably. He ever really helping them if he was employed by Tuya, and the whole point was for Tuya to get Micah and the mask back to the Dusk Court? So Master Ren was never really being helpful, just kind of capturing them in, and Micah was, right to not trust him the entire time? Like, the thing is, how far back do these threads go? Like, did Master Ren become a follower of Tuya when Tuya was posing as Micah's friend and nothing more? Because then Master Ren also doesn't know that she's the Baroness and just, you know, sells her to the Dusk Court. Like, depending on how far back Ren and Tuya goes tells you the context of whether or not Ren is looking out for Micah at all. And that's interesting. Like, everybody in this comic has real clear motives, except for the cats. The cats do a great job of throwing you for a loop in this, because we're told repeatedly that you cannot trust the cat because they're tricksy.
Which is very cat-like.
Yeah.
I will say this. I do think that Ren is a good cat person. He's a good guy, because the lady that he charters to bring them across the border through the human-owned lands, Amelia, she has her baby, and he makes a point to save the baby from getting speared. And this comic is dark enough where it would not make me in any way surprised if they just, like, had killed that baby.
Mm-hmm.
So he saves the baby from the soldiers, and then he takes time to break away from the rest of the group and get Emilia to safety. So
true.
He clearly, I don't know if he views her as a friend, but he clearly cares enough about at least this one human who is helping them that he's not going to just take advantage of their help and then ditch them when things get bad. He's going to care, like, follow through on, you know, keeping them safe. So the fact that he helped someone from the enemy faction, to me, says that maybe his morals are in the right place. And nowhere in it, like this whole volume, did I see him do anything that made me think he's, like, bad or, you know, going to betray anyone per se. I think he says a lot of things that are true, like when he's talking to Micah about the god inside of her and he's like, what the fuck was that? He's just, I think he remains aloof and kind of mysterious, which is very cat-like, but at the same time, I don't think we can expect, like, evil behavior from him.
Yeah. Yes, I agree completely.
Boom.
Yeah, talking about the cursing, what did you guys... Every time the, somebody dropped a big F-bomb in this, I'm like, that feels a little out of place. Like, the same reason, like, Goram and Frel and Frack, it would feel weird for me to hear the F-bombs. And I know they change it because television and they want to make their worlds feel more authentic and in the real world people cuss. But this to me feels like... Like, shouldn't somebody be speaking, like, Elvish or something? Shouldn't there be an Elvish curse word? I don't know. Maybe I'm so accustomed to that trope that I expect it, and it feels weird when it's not there. That might be what's going on. But every time, like, there's just a, what the fuck are you doing in my head? I'm like, whoa, Die Hard. It's like, this doesn't feel right.
I gotta admit, like, I'm so desensitized to cursing in general. You said that, and I was like... What? There's swears in this? And I open up my tablet, and the first page it opens to, it's the cat being like, fuck, after she says, I'll eat you, bitch, to, I think it's Yvette that she ends up fighting at the end.
Oh, yeah.
I read this 2 weeks ago, and I am now fussy on the plot.
Yeah, we had delayed this recording a little while. I think that might also be why I'm up and down on this. I took a long time. I read it. I, like, read one issue, waited, read another issue, waited. So it might be up and down in my mind because I was up and down in mood. But by the time we did get to the end, I was like, yeah, this is good. But yeah, the cursing, I don't know. Sometimes it makes sense, and sometimes I'm just like, you couldn't write, like, I don't know. It just felt weird. I don't know. It's my hang-up, I guess.
I didn't
get you.
Well, the first time it came up, it kind of pulled me out of the story a little bit. But then I just kind of was like, okay, this is just... She talks like a sailor. What can you do? And I think maybe because it's supposed to be like an alternate Asia. I don't know, maybe that's why they know that word. I don't know.
So
it didn't really bother me, though.
What do we think of Lady Atena?
She is cool.
Yeah, I that when her turn or the reveal towards the end that she was actually a sympathizer was an interesting twist, because up until that point she seemed like she was totally on board with what the Kumea were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Kumaya.
Mm-hmm. I Kumea in my head.
Yeah. So yeah, I thought she was. I didn't really know what her bigger role was going to be, because she didn't seem to be doing a whole lot in the story. She was kind of around when these big things happened, but she wasn't really directly involved. But then when she when it turns out she is like on the side of the Arcanix, that was a bit of a surprise for me.
Well. So, the thing that got me, too, is what was it? The guy's name, Resak, I think.
Yeah.
So she goes in, and, you know, everyone's saying this whole time that Arcanics sometimes look human, but you can always tell. Well, Humea is very clearly accepted as human. But then they have this dude who's a slave, right? He's the big guy that Sophia comes in with the chain at the auction at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And you assume he's an Arcanic, but they're brother and sister, aren't they? Or at least, I mean, he says a brother always helps his sister, and she says blood protects blood, which to me means that's not a superficial, like, I view you as a sibling relationship. That's a, they are related. So, to me, that kind of brings up a lot of questions about how much can they actually tell whether someone's human or arcanic, or is there something about the Cumea with their magic that people don't know, like that makes it difficult to tell? And by that token, like, is he just a human slave? Do humans enslave each other? So, I don't know, like that one scene actually brought up a lot of questions about their world for me.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that he is arcanic. She is more interesting, because we're told that her hair has changed color because she's taken too many of some kind of treatment, which might be a cover for her. I also think her relationship with Sophia is interesting here because she's a great supporter to Sophia, and that's also a cover for her, but it probably also enables her to do research of her own on the side. Probably of a much less nefarious nature, but give her a cover to find a way to hide Arcanics from humans. That idea, like you said, human, you can always tell. Well, what if you couldn't? What if you could use Lilium somehow to cover it up or to blind them or something? Like, because Sophia is such an experimenter, because her mother is such an experimenter, like, if there's any place you're going to get away with this and try to work on this problem, it might be here. But I do agree, she's in a very interesting position, and she reminds me a lot of when we were reading New Superman, and there's the woman there who's putting together the team, and her assistant, and I was interested in the assistant because the assistant seemed to always be supportive, and then you don't know what side, if the assistant is a national or a sympathizer with the whole, with the revolution in New Superman. Mm-hmm. And I'm interested in here because Atena is very much not a national. But it's interesting because she's in a very difficult position, and I'm very interested in watching it, especially now that everything's getting fucked up, and especially now that you know who Mother Superior is. It makes me wonder how much of that whole thing they know, and maybe that's their some of their driving reason too, because there's no communication. The other reason it matters is the whole way this world is set up right now, there's not communication. So nobody of the Arcanics know that, I imagine, that Mother Superior is the same as Micah, with the god inside her. Actually, she's not the same as Micah, because Mother Superior is the god in the skin of a human.
Right.
Whereas Micah is it's more much more of a partnership. So Mother Superior is just straight up the god in skin. I don't know how many people know that.
I would guess not many. But, yeah, I mean, and I think the Cumea are actually kind of the most fascinating part of this because, like they're clearly a really, they are a racist hate group, if you want to categorize it. But then it's not clear, like it seems like part of their whole idea is they hate Arcanics because they're filthy and they have magic and stuff and they eat people. But at the same time, isn't chopping up children and like, sucking out their magical essence to give yourself eternal youth and healing and stuff, like, that seems pretty heinous. So,
yeah.
I think that's kind of, that's going to be an interesting dynamic to see how individuals within the Cumea react to various, like, policies the group has, because, you know, if Atena is being, if she's like a double agent That's one thing. But, like, what about Sophia? Is she having, like, a real relationship with Atena? They seem, like...
close.
To genuinely... Yeah, they seem to genuinely care. But is this a ruse? And, so, I don't know. Like, I think it will be really interesting to explore how people react when they are doing things that evil. Like, do they actually believe it? I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you guys have anything else we want to talk about with this?
Before you the art. Right?
Yeah, this I think we should definitely talk about the art.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful. It's, it reminds me of Final Fantasy. Like, especially the more recent ones in terms of design. Just, oh my god, the coloring, the detail. I love how instead of doing, like, heavy inked lines, it's all, like, this tiny line work detail, and then this almost, like, I don't know, watercolor wash painting over it. It's just, it's gorgeous. I find zero fault with it. It engaged me every step of the way, and I took a while to read this, and it was not because it was tedious, it was because I wanted every panel to stop and look at every detail. I can't praise it enough. The faces are so expressive and, like, believable to me, and so, like, you can tell the characters apart from one another really clearly. Mm-hmm. The character design is really well done. The fantasy style design for, like, I don't know, magic is well done. The airships, and the covers. The covers are so good.
Yeah.
I can't even. That is my assessment.
Yeah, the full pages in this are glorious. Like, I'm scrolling through and I'm looking at the first full page when she first touches the mask. And it's like her with her eyes closed and her hair going wild and the sideways eye up above her. And it's gorgeous. And I've talked before, earlier about the character design being good and the quality of the art and the detail of, like, just the swirls on the pauldrons of somebody's shirt. Like, the time and detail to do that when it's not necessary shows that whoever's drawing this really, really loves the idea of this world and really, really wants to give it a rich feeling and a rich feeling of life. And I appreciate that we spend so much time in the human realm and the Kumea, and we get a really definitive feel for what that looks like. And then we go to the Dawn Court and the, like, the ruins, the overgrown ruins that the Dawn Court are operating out of. And it's just, it's bright in the way that the humans and the Kumea was dark. It's bright. There's, like, I just imagine, like, a rainbow coming out of a waterfall in ruins. And it's just, like, so much more lush and exactly the opposite, but in the same level of detail and the same feeling of love. And I appreciate that, like, this art not only does what it does really well, but does it flexibly so that you can have a much different texture in all the different areas that you're going to go to with this. Like, I really want to see what the Dawn Court looks like. The Dusk Court. I want to see what their place looks like. Because the Dawn Court was cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and, yeah, character design. I love that the Inquisitrixes or whatever are named after the weapons they use.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Hammer.
Yes.
She was just a big person for a while, and I was like, why do they call her Hammer? Is it just because she's, like, you know, like a hammer? And then in one page I noticed, no, she's got a giant fucking hammer standing next to her. Like, she's got a big-ass hammer sitting there. I was like, oh, I haven't seen her use that yet. Okay.
Doesn't she do, like, a one-handed throw of it at some point, too?
Yeah, I think so. She's badass.
Yeah.
All right. We want to rate this?
Sure.
All right. Jen, you go first. I think I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, I'm going to give this a 4.5. I really liked it. It was beautiful, and the whole tone of it just really appealed to me. I love sweeping mythos and world building in a fantasy setting, and I thought that this did it with, like, a really great tone and flavor. I'm not super attached to any of the characters, to be honest, except maybe the old god living inside Micah. If anything happened to a lot of them, I'd be like, oh, that's unfortunate. So that's kind of a downside. And the reason I wouldn't give it just like a solid 5, it didn't make me feel anything, but I'm really engaged in it and plan to keep reading. So, yeah, I think I said 4?
Are you 4.5?
Oh, 4.5? Yeah, sure, 4.5. It was really pretty.
All right, David?
Yeah, I'm going to give this 4.5, too. I had no idea what this was about before I started reading it. And, you know, I was pleasantly surprised by this. Just like Jen, I really liked the world building and stuff, but I also appreciated that we didn't get a whole lot of it yet. And there's a lot of, you know, there's characters that are interesting, but none of them, you know, we don't have the whole story behind them, and it makes me want to come back and read more. So, and obviously the art is absolutely beautiful. It's kind of like a good mix of manga and like traditional, like, I guess, Western comic book art. So I thought that was really cool. I definitely want to read more of this. Yeah.
Man, this is so tough for me because I did go back and forth so much when I was reading this. There's some stuff that kind of off-put me. Like, I'm not a big fan of steampunk as a thing. But then you go to the full page where Tuya and Micah, it turns out, are having their conversation on a cliff as a giant old god is just, like, staring at them. And it's like, that is beautiful. And I love the idea that these giant fucking things just walk around and people just ignore them. Like, how the fuck do you sleep with those things walking around? I know that they're ghosts and they don't interact with you at all or whatever, but freak me the fuck out. Like, there are things I don't care for in this just because they're things that generally don't strike my fancy. And then the things in this that are new and feel fresh, and I come to it and I'm like, I don't even understand how to interact with this yet. So I'm going to keep reading and figure it out. So God, I had so much back and forth. But I am a sucker for a good cliffhanger, and Tuya is a good cliffhanger, I'll tell you what. So I'm gonna give this a 4. I was thinking 3.5, but I'm gonna give this a 4. Cause as we talked, and I mean, the quality of this art just cannot be understated. I think this is one of the best, pieces of artwork we've read in a long, long time. So yeah, I'm gonna give it a 4 as well. That's it for this week. If you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. If you support us for at least a penny, you get access to bonus episodes every week. So next week there won't be an episode on the regular feed, but if you're a Patreon subscriber, you'll get access to the bonus episode that you're going to get. A penny gets you that. There's other perks, other levels that you can become a patron and get cool stuff. And we're getting pretty close to another one of our goals. And hopefully we'll be able to start getting to some conventions pretty soon, doing live panels. Fingers crossed. I'm going to keep trying. I will find a small enough convention that we will have a live episode. God damn it. It'll happen. I'll just have to find one. But this also wraps up our best of 2016 series, kind of. We're going to follow this up with a turns out it was good. There's a bunch of stuff. I know we're in April now, and we're just now finishing up our best of last year, but it's because there's so many good fucking comics all the time. And whenever we try to choose comics to put in our best of series, we always have to cut stuff. And sometimes we cut stuff that turns out to have been good and sure, but it was like a 1-year thing. And, you know, you kind of give or take. And then there's stuff that we have to skip over, and it turns out those things, they were good, but we didn't think that they had the staying power, or we just didn't have a reason to get back to finding them. So there's things that just I have been wanting to read for so long because the hype about them has stayed high for the last couple years as we've been doing this show. So we're going to follow this episode up with Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, Squirrel Power by Ryan North. This would have been in our best of 2014. And we didn't get a chance to read it, and my God, it still is getting really good reviews, and it's still ongoing. So we're going to read Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. And then we're going to do Odyssey, Off to Far Ithaca by Matt Fraction. Poor Matt Fraction. We do so many of his comics because they're so good, and he's such a good writer. So when we do a best of, it's like, oh God, I don't want to put in Matt Fraction again. but that's something we shouldn't do, because Matt Fraction is a really good fucking writer, and Odyssey is, I own these, and I cherish them because they're fucking insane. So I cannot wait to read Odyssey and talk about it with you guys. I'm really excited about that episode. I'm going to finish that Turns Out It Was Good series up with Bitch Planet, Extraordinary Machine by Kelly Sue DeConnick. And Kelly Sue DeConnick is the same thing. Like, everything she does seems like it's magic. So we don't want to overload our feed with Kelly Sue stuff. But, yeah, we're going to do it. Bitch Planet. Because Bitch Planet, like, I follow Kelly Sue DeConnick on Tumblr and Twitter. And it's, like, nothing but reblogs of people getting tattoos from the comic. And, this thing's been out for a couple of years, and the people are still getting tattoos, even though it's not a monthly, it's a whenever she gets time kind of a comic, and if it has that kind of staying power and that kind of impact still, I think we should read it. So we're going to follow this episode, just recap Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, Odyssey, and Bitch Planet. If you want to recap of that and see what we have coming up after that, like, we have that past episode 300 planned out. Go to welcometocomics.com. On the left, click on future shows. You can see everything we have coming up. You can hit past shows. Read, listen to our past 286 episodes. Jesus Christ. Every time I say the number, it makes me like, what? So yeah, welcometocomics.com. All that good stuff. Contact us through there. All that kind of thing. Yeah, I'm psyched for next week. Unbeatable Squirrel Girl is going to be fun. We've been reading some serious stuff, and this is going to be fun. And I can't wait for fun. So until then, everybody, goodbye.
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 Yay.